Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Malthouse Games Podcast. My name is Delton. I'll be your host today. And with me, as usual, is my lovely wife and yellow player, Haley.
It's me, Haley-o.
Welcome to episode number 167 of the Malthouse Games Podcast. We are a podcast all about board games, card games, role-playing games, tabletop games, dice games, things of that sort, and beer.
Absolutely. So we are coming in hot with two cold brews today. What's on the menu first, Delty Poo?
I can't read the can too well because I just popped it to pour it. This is from Cockendorfer Brewing, which we've had on the show before in Duncan, Oklahoma. And this is their New England IPA. 12 fluid ounce can, a 63 IBUs, and a 6.84% alcohol by volume. They say, we add 5 pounds of hops per barrel to this East Coast style IPA. This results in citrusy tropical fruit aromas with the juicy flavors of pineapple, grapefruit, coconut, mango, and tangerine.
Now, I've not necessarily had this one on the podcast, but we have had this one before. Anything by Cockendorfer is just good. You take a Cockendorfer and you have an IPA, that's an IPA. You have a Cockendorfer porter, that's a porter. It's just a really solid standard beer, but this is probably one of my favorite IPAs that are made by an Oklahoma company, because this is out of Duncan, America, right, Delty?
Yes.
And I like the can, too.
Yeah, the can's really neat. This one has like a sea scene on it. I don't think we've
done
this.
It has a kraken. Yeah, a kraken is taking down a ship and a pirate's going, "Arr, I'm a pirate."
I feel like we've talked about this. Oh, we have. Episode 138.
Did we really?
Ha-ha.
Ah, we did.
We're running out of beers. At least beers nearby whenever the time comes and we go, oh, no, we're out.
That was over a year ago, to give us credit.
That was.
Yeah.
But one thing I was going to say to consider here, so they add 5 pounds of hops per barrel of IPA. I believe that a barrel in terms of brewing is around 30 gallons, 30 to 33 gallons, something like that. So it's a lot of beer. So 5 pounds to 30 gallons like isn't like a crazy amount, but it also is a crazy amount.
Well, now let's taste the crazy amount.
Got that super citrusy smell.
It just smells like orange juice and I love it.
It does. It's cloudy with that kind of tan orangey.
Standard issue English IPA right there. It is delightful. And what's the alcohol, Delty Poo?
It was 6.83 or something like that.
We are blessed, but not as blessed with this alcohol content as we're going to be with the beer number two.
6.84, but yes, New England IPA. It's very citrusy, very tangerine. It does have that categorical juiciness that you get with a lot of IPAs. But a lot of times I feel like that term is used more for West Coast IPAs. And being New England, you get a lot more hazy, which is exactly what this is. But it's very good.
10 out of 10. Would recommend. Now we need Ben to come up so we can take him on a grand IPA tour up here.
We do, but life is busy and I understand.
So what have you been up to lately, Delty Poo?
Lately, last time that we had the episode, it was Token Con. And after that, or since then, we've just been, I feel like, kind of chill, but also doing things. I've already forgotten what we've done because it's just life's life.
No, we've had a full couple of weeks. So first of all, you had Kyle come over.
Yeah, me and Kyle had a jam day, worked on songs.
Yes, you and Kyle worked on songs, which was really great. We also had a Friday whenever Riley came up, and we got to do a pre-screening.
We did. We got to go to a movie that we can't talk about in a pre-screening setting. So basically before the 90% of the sound design, before color correction, before any CGI, stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a little art house film house or whatever, called Rodeo Cinema here in the Metro. And they have one location on Film Row, and they have one location down in the historic stockyards. And they get in a lot of art house films, they get in a lot of indie films, so on and so forth. And this is a local director who has, I believe, created a feature film for what will be on Amazon. And like Delt said, we can't talk about it at all, but it was really neat to see a film before all the special effects came on. Like, for example, at one point it's supposed to be fire. And it was not fire. What was it?
It was just some light tubes.
There's some light tubes there. And he's like, just imagine this is fire. And we're like, oh.
Yeah.
And at another point, it said, insert drone footage here.
Yeah, it had insert drone footage here. And it just left that up for as long as they would have drone footage. And I thought that was really funny. But it's very cool. Like, the color correction was the biggest one I noticed, where between scenes, the colors were, it wasn't drastically different, but you could tell it was filmed in a different location or something. And that was something even though I've thought about color correction in movies and color of movies, I've never thought about it so strongly as when it doesn't have it.
Yes.
And it's like, cool that it's like, hey, we're going to be doing this. Don't worry. This is just a pre-screen, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Give us thoughts on the plot, so on and so forth.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience.
And so that was last Friday. And then that Saturday, we got up bright and early and went to estate sales and actually got to go explore a probably multi-million dollar house. It was huge.
Ridiculous house that one side felt like you're walking into like a Roman forum with marble tile and a pool out back with a fountain and all this expensive stuff. And then the other half of the house looked like to where you actually would live. And it was like kind of mid-century modern-esque and strange. I don't know. Really weird house. Definitely worth a fortune.
Absolutely. That was incredible just to explore. I think half the fun of estate sales is just exploring the houses.
Oh, well, for sure. Because then we got to go to that really gross, kind of gross house.
That was also mid-century modern-ish.
In certain parts, it was mid-century modern. The entire dining room, ceiling and walls and all, was covered in mirrors.
Yes.
Like, not covered in mirrors by they hung them up. The wall was mirrors.
And the ceiling was mirrors.
And it was weird.
Be a great place for a murder scene in a movie.
The kitchen was all rock. Like, on the floor was just like they said, you know what?
This rock. Unpolished rock.
Yes, just weird. It's like the side of a house rock, but on the floor. And then we went upstairs, and in the house was wooden in weird spots and carpeted in weird spots, and it had a bathtub next to carpet, and you could tell why that was a mistake.
No, it wasn't a bathtub. It was a hot tub next to carpet.
Oh, okay.
It was a built-in hot tub. So it was a wonky house. We got to explore that, and in the afternoon, we went to play with Brian and Jessica.
Yeah, we played games with Brian and Jessica and saw them, had a good time visiting and catching up and setting a schedule for our next play day.
Absolutely. And then this weekend has been full of adventures. We've had Riley and Lakin up again. And what do we do today, Delty?
Today, we woke up, went to a couple garage sales, nothing crazy. We got to go to EARC, which is a local thrift store here in Edmond that helps out people. They actually do very good work with the money that they make. And we got to go to their really cool, they have two locations. One of them is the, we're just going to throw all this shit on the shelf and you can pick through it, kind of felt like a Goodwill. And then the location we went to today is a lot more organized and has more of their...
all the rich people stuff.
All the stuff that will actually make them good money. Or decent money, maybe.
Like designer cashmere sweaters with tags still on at like a quarter of the price.
It's still super cheap, though. I bought 8 drum mallets for like xylophone, which I'm looking for. I'm trying to find a glockenspiel or a xylophone for super cheap.
Send Delty any leads.
And I bought 8 mallets, 4 pairs, one of which the mallet doesn't have its like fabric over the outside. But 4 pairs of mallets for $20. And they're not bent or anything, just the handles where the rubber is just like a little gummy in spot, so it needs cleaned and maybe wrapped with some tape. But brand new, those run $15 to $20 a pair. So I was like, I will gladly pay $20 for 4 pair of something I can use and have fun with and make music with. So it was good. That was really fun. And then after we did that,
we went to Paint and Palette.
We went to Dick's Warehouse, got some pants.
Yes, we did.
We went to a Paint and Palette thing where you have a drink if you want, and you get to paint as a group and paint a painting that's easy to paint but still looks bad when you're me.
Well, so Riley asked Lakin what she wanted to get me for my birthday. My birthday was back in November, and Lakin said she wanted to do a Paint and Palette because that's what we did for Mother's Day last year, and she really liked it. And so she said, okay, which one does Aunt Hey Hey want? And so she picked one that is, it was flowers and butterfly, and one butterfly. And so she picked that one, and she asked if Uncle Delt was going to join too, and by God, he was. So Uncle Delt painted a beautiful purple butterfly.
No, orange, thank you.
Orange butterfly.
My butterfly looks like hot garbage that was just defecated onto my canvas. So that was great. My flowers were fine.
They're pretty tulips.
I wanted to make them more like the way you got yours, where you actually had some shading to show like definition. But I felt like it moved so quickly once we got to flowers, and I couldn't keep up because I was still trying to finish the stems, and I couldn't get them the way I wanted. So it's fine. I'm not a painter, and I understand why. So it's good. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. We did that. And then we went to get Goro Ramen, which is a delicious ramen place. And then from there, we went to the tulip field farm thing. Went to one that ended up being closed, which was dumb. But I found another one that had tulips. And we went to it. And they had a greenhouse with some black petunias, which were very cool.
Incredible looking.
Yes. And the leaves of those feel so strangely rubbery, but then they leave your fingers kind of sticky. And I'm sure that's not great.
And so since then, we have dumped a pile of Legos in the middle of the living room floor so Lakin can play while Riley goes and picks them up some pizza. We're recording this here podcast, and then we're going to go probably do whatever Lakin says. We're at a seven-year-old's mercy tonight, so we might do Legos, might do painting. We might watch Bob's Burgers movie again. We don't know. The world is her oyster, and we're just living in it, baby.
Yeah, I just want to take a shower. It's been a long day.
But aside from all these shenanigans with my sister and my niece, we've also been playing some games lately.
Oh, here's the door. It's straight ahead. It's a game.
This is a game that we actually played with Kyle whenever he came up, and we played again with Brian and Jessica last weekend. It's one that is three players and up. 3 to 4 players. Three to four players. This is why I don't explain the games.
Yes. So the game for today, as you could tell by the title of this episode, is Inflation. Inflation is the new version of a game called Zimbabwe Trick out of Japan. The game is designed by Taiki Shinzawa, who you have heard me talk about on this podcast, and this one is published by New Mill Industries. The game, I think, is only purchasable right now on New Mill Industries, and I think it's, $20 on their website. This is a trick-taking game by Taiki Shinzawa, the best at trick-taking games. So, you will recognize his name because he is by far the only person. He's my favorite trick-taking designer because I'm not a trick-taking fan, but his games I love. He has made Ghost of Christmas, which I've talked about.
9 Lives from episode 136.
There you go. 9 Lives from 136. So he made 9 Lives. Those are both through All Play, previously Board Game Tables. He also has one called American Bookstore or Bookshop. I can't remember, but I don't think that's published in English or in America right now. I just think it's one of those you'd have to find. He had Zimbabwe Trick, and he has several other games and games he's been a part of as well. But Inflation is a reimagining, or at least a retitling and theming or something of Zimbabwe Trick. So Zimbabwe Trick, the way that it works, and I'm going to read off of New Mill's website. It's newmillindustries.com. Just go to their store and you can find Inflation. So a trick-taking game, if you don't know, everyone plays a card, and generally it's the highest value of cards win the trick. And the trick is basically that hand of single-played cards. One person usually takes all of those. That signifies they've won one trick, and you play another. A lot of times, these games have suits. The suits are something like spades or hearts or diamonds. If you play a diamond, everybody else must play a diamond if they have it. Otherwise, they could play something else. And a lot of times, these games have what they call a trump suit, which is a suit that, if played, it will automatically beat anything else except another trump suit of a higher value. Pretty simple, straightforward, not too crazy. It's games that I've never quite understood, but I feel like I'm finally starting to get it because I keep finding ones I really like. Well,
by one designer in particular.
In particular, yes.
Spoiler alert!
So, Taiki Shinzawa here with, I almost said Zimbabwe Trick, with Inflation, it has a very unique thing about it. There are no trump suits in Inflation, but it has numbers instead. It has 1-1 in the deck. 2-2s, 3-3s, 4-4s, all the way up to 10-10s. So the deck is just numbers. Each number is its own individual color and suit in a way. I should mention one thing that he does in his games that happens in several trick-taking games is you get to basically make a wager on how many tricks you think you'll win. So you'll get to look at your hand and beforehand say, you know, I think I'll win 3 tricks of the 12 cards in the hand. You'll play 12 tricks that way. I think I'll win 3 of them. And your points will change based on if you got some of them, all of them, or if you got more than you bet on. And each game handles those rules differently. Well, according to the New Mill website, it says, what makes this game unique? Cards do not clear from in front of players after a trick is resolved. Instead, you play your next card so that it overlaps to the left, making a larger number. For example, if you play a 1 on your first turn and a 5 on your second turn, your number is now 51. If you play an 8 on your following turn, you now have 851 in front of you. So the numbers get very large, it says, and it can be fun to say them out loud as you play, if you're into that sort of thing. This one is also must follow, which can lead to you taking tricks you may not have expected. Essentially, if I played a 5 on my turn, and I'm leading, I'm the first player for that trick, everyone else must follow with a 5 if they have it. So that really provides a strange spot, because early in the game, depending on what you play, could really change how the game comes out later on in that hand by the time you get down out of your 12 cards. I think it's 12 card hand. But it makes it really, really interesting because you're playing these numbers and winning based on the total number in front of you. So if I played a 4 and Haley also had a 4, so she had to play it and other players do whatever. And then let's say I won that hand. Or I guess it wouldn't be me. Whoever plays the last card, if there's a tie, is going to be the winner. So if I played a 4, Haley played a 4, player C played a 4, and player D played a 4, player D would win that hand if everyone just had a single four in front of them, because they were the last person to do so. Let's say player D then plays a seven, so they now have a 74. Let's say I play a 74. Then Haley doesn't have a seven, so she plays an 84. Player C has a 74. Haley would win with an 84 while the rest of us have a 74. Then she would lead. Now, the big kicker here is the 10, which obviously sounds super strong because if you played it at any time, you know, it just bumps up quite a bit. It's two digits. Well, when you play the 10, it's really strong for that turn. However, when you play your next card, you will cover the 1, leaving only the 0 of the 10 showing. For example, if a 10 was the first card played, you have a 10. If you follow it up the next round by playing a 2, you will have 20, not 210. So the 10 is really strong right up front, or really strong to just nab a hand, but then it's going to be the weakest card on the table. So it's really interesting how you have to think about the game, because you have to think about your number of what you're playing now versus what you'll play in the future. Because there's times where we're like, oh, we all have the same number, but this one. Because like we'll have the first three or four numbers identical, but then somebody has a 10 and it somehow overlaps and someone doesn't have it. And I don't know. It's this really interesting thought process that you have to go through to figure out what's the best play here. If I play a 9, there's 9 9s. So there's a high chance that somebody else has a 9 and so on. And it just makes for really interesting decision spaces and decisions on which cards to play, when to play them, and having to follow the lead card's number is also just really tricky, because if they play a 4 thinking no one's got 4s and then everyone's got a 4, it's like, oh, well, now they've lost the trick and it goes to, you know, the last player to play it if the numbers are the same. Now, when I said in this that there is bidding, or basically betting, making a wager, I'm thinking I'll win 3 of these tricks out of this hand. There's a certain rule with this. If you've won tricks, it's 1 per trick. If you've won exactly how many you've wagered, you get double the points. Then the person who has won the most tricks that did not get exactly what they wagered is going to get 0 points. So almost every single time, someone's going to get 0 points. Because I think it's pretty much impossible for two people to both get exactly. That would be really tough. But it's really interesting. And it just makes it a peculiar game, because you want to, oh shoot, I overshot, I'm up here, I've got 6 tricks, I only bid for 5, but Haley somehow wins 7 of them, then I'm fine, I still get 1 point a trick, even though I overshot my own goal because Haley went even further ahead. So that just adds another little element. But basically then you'll play a hand of 12 cards for each player, so with 3 players you'll play 3 hands total, and with 4 players you'll play 4 hands total, add up the scores at the end, and that's going to be who wins the game. This game is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating in like every way for me. All of his trick-taking games have been great, but this one, there's just something about it. I don't know. It's crazy. What do you think, Haley?
I really enjoy it. I like his trick-taking games. I've always liked trick-taking games. I know that when we talked about enemies to lovers as a topic, I think a couple of years ago, you had talked about how you really did not like trick-taking games. And then you discover Taiki Shinzawa's games and you fell in love with trick-taking, his style at least. And so I really like the game. What gives me anxiety is trying to pick beforehand how many tricks I'm going to win. I am not good at that. I've talked about when it comes to betting, I either overshoot or undershoot, and it's the same with this. When I bet on myself, I either overshoot or undershoot. Now, I did win when we played against Kyle. I'm very proud about that. I think a lot of that was luck more than anything, and also playing with a new player. But I really enjoy the game. I just always get so anxious whenever I have to bet that initial time.
In all of his games, I think except for we've played part of American Bookshop or Bookstore. We've only played like a half a game of it maybe. But all of his games so far that we have, Inflation, Ghost of Christmas, and 9 Lives, all have that like wagering what you're going to get. Now, we also have from New Mill Industries as well, because these two were together in a Kickstarter. It was Inflation and another one of his trick-taking games called Charms. I've heard it's not as good as Inflation from like the reviewers that I read. I like to read Dan Thoreau, Space Biff. I like to read his reviews. They're very high-level written reviews, and I think he's just a very interesting read, and I like the points that he makes. Charms seems not to be hitting as highly as Inflation for people, but I'm still very excited to try it because at this point, I don't know that Taiki Shinzawa can miss for me, because everything he does makes me go, oh, well, that's interesting. Oh, this is interesting. And it's the same style of game. It's like taking a worker placement and playing one that you go, oh, I like the way that this is kind of different than the rest. Every one of his trick-taking games is like that. The only other trick-taking games I've liked as much has been like The Crew, but I like the cooperative element of it. Now, we still have not played Sail, which is not by Taiki Shinzawa, but it's also Board Game Tables. We have not played Sail yet. We need to. Tyler said it was really good. Said if you get a chance to play it, do it. So, but yes, Inflation from by Taiki Shinzawa from New Mill Industries. Highly recommend if you like trick-taking games. This has been, I want to play it, and I want to show a bunch of people this game, but I know that I'm not good at trick-taking games, and I'm finally getting to where I kind of understand how they function. But even in that, I understand as someone who's not used to them, it's a weird concept, kind of, and the way that you have to think about it is strange with ordering your hand, what to save late or early, especially when you're wagering how many tricks you're going to win.
I feel like it's a tug of war. Like, you don't want to play all of your high ones at first. You don't want to save them all for the end either. And you're just having to balance between how many do I want to win? Because usually you think of games, you think of trick taking. I want to win all the tricks. But when you're betting on yourself and you get negative points for betting too high, that just adds that other element.
It really does. Like, there's a game, I don't think you played it, but you watched me demo it when Fox in the Forest first came out. I wasn't a big fan. I'm still not, of Fox in the Forest because it's only two-player, and two-player with trick-taking doesn't really work well for me. The Crew has some special rules to make it work, which makes more sense. It's also cooperative. Another reason we need to play Sail, it's only two-player cooperative, but like Fox in the Forest does it where you want to win a certain number of tricks, but if you win too many, you lose. And so it's kind of got that same element, but you're not actually wagering ahead of time. You're just trying to control it as you go and play, okay, if I win this one, I can start again. I got to try to win a couple, but then I want to lose some. So if we played it now, I might be a bigger fan because I understand those games more and I get what it's trying to do. So we need to give that another shot at some point. But yes, highly recommend Inflation. Go to newmillindustries.com and just buy it and buy all of his games because they're great.
I was going to say, this tagline should really be buy all Taiki Shinzawa games.
Yes. Yes, whenever we go to Japan, you bet your ass I'm going to be trying to find Zimbabwe Trick and American Bookshop and all of his different games if I can somewhere and bringing them home, along with a bunch of Oink games.
I think that's a nice segue into our topic.
Hey, what can I get you?
I'd like a topic.
Any special way?
Make it a top shelf topic.
Coming up. Enjoy.
But before we get totally into this topic here, we're going to crack the next beer. This is also from Kockendorfer Brewing Co. I honestly am wondering if we might have had this on here too, only because the artwork feels so familiar.
We've had it multiple times just in general, but also yeah. A lot of their, like the, most of their beer labels are that like monochromatic or that sepia
tint. They're very
tint.
Similar.
They're very similar. The IPA is the only one I remember that's actually in color.
Oh, that makes sense. So this is their Imperial Stout with cacao nibs. That's cocoa.
Cacao.
That says cocoa. Shouldn't it be cacao nibs?
That's a great question. I have no idea. That's a safe word.
Cocoa, yeah. Cacao. Imperial Stout with cocoa nibs. 12 fluid ounces, IBU of only 29, with 8% alcohol by volume. It is dense, thick flavor with a chocolatey finish, thanks to the addition of cocoa nibs in the boil.
I am incredibly excited for this beer. It is one of my favorites of all time. I feel like we're on opposite sides of the taste and mouthfeel spectrum tonight.
We really are. Two beers that are very different.
But two beers that are very good from the same brewery.
We need to go down and actually visit the brewery in person and have beers there.
I don't even know what else is in Duncan. I know that they have an OSU County extension.
Nothing.
So like you can join the 4-H group there.
Say hi to my aunt and uncle.
Say hi to your aunt and uncle. Say hi to the 4-H.
You can. I don't want to, but you can.
I'll go say hi. Sup? And then go to Kockendorfer. Isn't there a casino down there? I mean, there's a casino in a lot of small towns in Oklahoma, America.
This thing just smells like dark chocolate, and it looks black as night.
It does. It smells just like dark chocolate bar.
And I will say, look at that head retention on both of ours. It has at least a half inch head on each of our glasses after pouring.
This is the first time I can say I have a bigger head than you.
Hey, it's because I have a gigantic noggin. It's just a little dry, but it finishes just ever so slightly. It's a semi-sweet chocolate.
It's like a super dark chocolate, like that 80% dark chocolate that has a little bit of sugar and a lot of cocoa. Oh, it is good.
It's really good. You get a lot of malt in there, which I like a lot.
And the aftertaste is just like Hershey cocoa powder.
It's also not, it's got a little bit of a drying effect toward the back. I don't know if that's the higher alcohol content, but it has a little bit of that dry finish that I didn't expect. But it's not dry as in like a porter or a dry, not a dry stout.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though. But yes.
It doesn't dry your mouth out, but it just has a...
A little bit. Just a teensy bit of that drying. It's like it doesn't leave any oils behind like the last one.
No oils, but just like, you know, not that I would ever take a spoonful of cocoa powder, but I feel like if I did, that's the aftertaste. That's the finish.
100%. It's very, very good, though. If you like a nice stout, imperial stout, with some cocoa in it, this is a hell of a beer.
10 out of 10.
So the topic for today was Haley's great idea.
Chock full of them, baby.
Which is designer superlatives.
So superlatives, you might have remembered from your high school yearbook, are most likely to X, Y, and Z. Most likely to X, Y, and Z. Voted best blank. Voted best blank. And so we have a mixture of 5 superlatives that we would like to go over today. And the very first one is most likely to always be bought.
So this is, which designer will you always buy their games? Taiki Shinzawa, baby. I mean, I've got more, but that's one.
Why is that, Delzy? I know we just kind of went over it, but give us more.
I'll give you both my two designers that are always topping my list there. Taiki Shinzawa, I have never played one of his games and disliked it. I've always been intrigued by it, and I keep wanting to play him. Second choice, Cole Worley. Essentially the same reasons on a different scale. There you go.
Nice. And for me, mine is Uwe Rosenberg. Because every time I play an Uwe Rosenberg game, it's very much a math game. It's very much a game you can practice and get better.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's abstract, but those are the games that I'm really drawn to. And so all the Uwe Rosenberg games, from the Bonanza to Patchwork and beyond, that is one that I'll always buy.
There's so many we don't have. I will say we have, spoiler for future episode, at some point, we do have Atiwa I Got You for Christmas that we have not touched.
Yes, we will be touching that soon.
We got a lot of games to get through on this shelf. You guys have no idea.
And so the next one is, who's voted most likely to succeed at a Kickstarter?
My vote is going to be, and I don't know if this is because of partnerships with publishers, design success of how good the games are, or a mixture of everything, but I'm going to say Eric Lang.
Because yes.
when you've got Blood Rage and you've got Rising Sun and you've got Ankh, that guy just, he puts a game out, especially with Simon, but he puts a game out and it funds and it makes a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah. I remember whenever you spent the equivalent of a car payment on Rising Sun.
Still do not regret it because of how much that game goes for and also how much fun we've had with that game.
No regrets.
No regrets.
And so for me, I think that's Jamie Stegmeier of Stonemaier Games.
Yeah.
Because I think every single Kickstarter you've had the opportunity to back, you've backed. He funds like immediately. He has cats. He's going to succeed.
Well, they actually stopped doing Kickstarter years ago.
Oh, did they?
They go ahead and just produce, and you can essentially pre-order, which is why I have a numbered copy of Tapestry.
Ah.
I have not bought all of their games, but when it comes to crowdfunding and pre-orders, they generally sell out of majority of it.
So I am still right because He was so successful at Kickstarter, he doesn't have to do them anymore. I win.
Basically, yes. The next one is the biggest flirt of designers.
Oh, looking at you, Jennifer.
And looking at you, Alan.
Hey, first time I met Jennifer. So first time I met her in real life. We're walking over to where they're sitting at the Rose Garden in Portland. I go down this hill. I lock eyes with her. She runs over, grabs me by my butt cheeks and lifts me up to the air. Hello.
I just remember her saying, oh, I'm grabbing your butt. And you're like, yeah. And she was like, okay.
Oh, like, that's fine. And then she looks at you and says, I just grabbed your wife's butt. And I said, that's fine. So, yeah. Hey, Jennifer, what's up? Biggest flirt. That's who I'd vote for.
Yes. Jennifer and Alan. Alan is always over the top and complimentary of everybody that he loves.
Yes. So biggest flirts.
The biggest flirts. Also, speaking of those two, if you want to be like them and be awesome Patreon patrons, you can go to patreon.com/malthousegames. Where such people as Alan, Jennifer, and Cliff, and several others support us on Patreon and help keep this show going and doing all that kinds of fun stuff. So head over there if you want to check out our Patreon.
Yes, thank you guys so much, and thank you so much for the attention, too. And so the next one is most likely to never be bought by us.
What's your answer, Haley?
Mine is, what's his name?
Vital Lacerda.
Vital Lacerda. I am not saying he's a bad designer. I'm not saying he makes bad games. In fact, he is a fantastic designer, makes fantastic games, really popular. I will not buy a single god dang one of his games. I do not enjoy them.
Of the games you've played of his, which one is the one that you were like, maybe?
The one about wine. Vinos? Is that right?
Vinos Deluxe.
Vinos Deluxe, yeah.
That's one of the ones that I would like to pick up.
Yeah, that was fine. It does not beat my favorite Viticulture. But
yeah,
that's most likely not be bought by the Haley.
The most likely to not be bought by me, I said, was Isaac Childress, who is the creator of Gloomhaven. I don't know all of the games he's made. I think it's like Gloomhaven and Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion and Frosthaven. I'm not going to buy them because they're not my type of game. As much as I look at Gloomhaven's box and I see it go on sale or a used copy that someone didn't really get into, I'm like, man, I really want to play that. But then I think about it and I go, every time I've played a game that's a campaign game and every time I've played a game that's a dungeon crawler, I play a couple games and then I'm just not into it. It's like I romanticize the idea of them, but I never really enjoy them. So that's the only reason, because that's a lot of work he's put into those.
Yeah, no diss to those designers.
No.
Just not our style.
And the last one.
Most changed.
Now, I took most changed as kind of most varied. So
yes.
Designers with a very large swath of different types of designs or something.
Yes, and so for me, I chose Elizabeth Hargrave because she has everything from Toosie Moosie to Mariposas to Wingspan and all the Wingspansions. And so I'm really impressed with her array of designs. And so for me, she is most changed. What about you?
Mine was going as a little bit different direction. I was going to say Wolfgang Warsch. He is the designer that you would know from The Quacks of Quedlinburg, from That's So Clever, or That's Pretty Clever, any of the clever games, Taverns of Tiefenthal, Wavelength, The Mind, Illusion, The Fuzzies. Like, that is a heck of a spread of games. And that just has always really impressed me that he's so all over the place in that way. But he's got so many good games, too. You can tell he just has a mind for games.
Absolutely. And so those are our superlatives. Let us know via email, via Twitter, via Instagram, via whatever you'd like. What are your superlatives? Who would you vote for each of those categories? Or are there categories we should further examine?
Yeah, just send those over to us. Contact at malthousegames.com, or as Haley said, at malthousegames on Instagram's probably best, or Twitter.
Yes.
Well, let's go to the question so we can wrap this up because I'm really hungry and it's 8:10 p.m.
And now, join us for a Malt House Games podcast special bite-sized question.
So the question of the episode is, what superlative were you voted as high school? Wait, what superlative were you voted for in what? What superlative were you given in high school? How's that?
There you go. We didn't do that because we weren't lame. So I was just valedictorian of my 36-person class. Whoop, whoop.
What do you think you would have been voted for if they would have done superlatives?
Something stupid. It would have been like nerdiest kid, or kid that likes the most metal, or kid that grew his hair the longest. Or
best hair. You probably get best hair.
I should have got best hair.
He had great hair. He has great hair now. It's sickening how great his hair is.
It's because I don't do anything to it. I just
it's
clean
beautiful.
It and keep it on my head.
God is beautiful. I was voted most polite.
Which is accurate.
That's accurate.
She's only
kind of.
She's only an asshole behind closed doors.
We're on the internet.
She talks about you guys behind your backs. But that's pretty accurate, actually.
Yeah. So I was voted most polite.
Yep.
I'll take it. It's fine. Not as cool as best hair like Delton would have got, but I'll take it.
I mean, mine's theoretical.
I'll vote for you.
It's all fine. But yes, well, I think that's going to wrap this episode up. So thanks you, Jesus.
We can't speak today.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Malthouse Games Podcast, episode 167. Be sure to send us an email, contact@malthousegames.com. Reach out on social media at Malthouse Games. You can find Haley at
SQUIRREOYGEEK.
And you can't find me personally. I mean, you can, but I probably won't recognize the message. If you want to get into our Discord and see the very few things going on there, hit me up with an email or a message, and I'm sure I can make that happen. Until then, though, make sure to keep an eye out for the next episode
We're drinking 8.6% beer on empty stomach.
Yeah, right now. It's just 8%.
Ah.
Or wait, was it 8.6?
Oh, that's 8%. You're right.
Yeah, it's good enough. It's fine. Anyway, hopefully next episode we're going to be doing a IPA extravaganza, but if not, it's within the next few episodes. So keep your eyes peeled and ears open for that one.
Thanks to our generous benefactor.
Thanks to our generous benefactor of Ben Canellis and giving us a beer donation for us to go pick up the craziest and best IPAs we can find and having a massive IPA review on the podcast. I don't know how we're going to make that happen without just mumbling and stuttering through words the whole time, but we'll figure it out. I mean, I guess we can spread them out. That's probably the smart thing, but we'll get it. You know what we should do?
What?
And I'll clear this with Ben when he listens. We should do, every time we drink one of those, we do a review, and then we just do a giant mash cut of every one of those reviews in a row in an episode. So it's like, we're going to talk about the game, and then it breaks to a review of a beer, and then we talk about the game some more. And we keep inputting all these different beer reviews throughout the episode like commercials. That makes sense?
I think so.
I think it would be fun, but anyway.
To be continued.
I'm freaking hungry. We're going to go eat. Thank you again for coming to the show. Hit us up, and until next time, sit back, relax, grab a drink, and play some games. play some games. You guys want to play some games with me?
Your beery showing.
It's showing. Sit back, relax, grab
Geary
a drink.
Valedictorian right there,
and,
my brother.
And play some games. We'll see you folks later.
Goodbye.
Bye.